Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is MJ Rosenberg, who's a special correspondent at the Washington Spectator and a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. He worked on Capitol Hill for various Democratic members of the House and Senate for 15 years and previously served as the director of policy analysis for the Israel Policy Forum and was an editor of Near East Report, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC's biweekly publication on Middle East policy. Welcome to Background Briefing, MJ Rosenberg.
Oh, thank you, Ian.
And what's going on here on Capitol Hill, where you've got on Tuesday, Tuesday, a group of four dozen House Democrats met privately in the White House. The White House is concerned about the Senate bill by Republican Mark Kirk and Democrat Robert Menendez getting traction in the House. Eric Cantor is picking it up in the House. He's also talking with Steny Hoyer, who's apparently very much in AIPAC's corner. So could AIPAC and the House and Senate scuttle the president's and opening? And by the way, it's not just the president's, the P5 plus one that just closed this deal with Iran on Sunday.
Well, the bill, which, as you said, it's the Menendez-Kirk-Schumer bill in the Senate. And that's where most of the action will be, already has 58 co-sponsors. So it's getting really close to assuming that the president says he would veto the bill if it passed, because he knows, and the Iranians say that if we add more sanctions after agreeing to a deal that includes in part lifting sanctions, they will walk away. So the president is saying, this is a major foreign, policy initiative by the United States and by our allies and the Russians and the Chinese. And a big international effort, and we would be, betraying the terms of the deal by imposing sanctions. But AIPAC, which is pushing this bill, is very close to the 67 to overturn a presidential veto, which would be almost unprecedented.
And what's happening in the House?
Well, it wouldn't be a problem at all to get two-thirds for an override because the House is Republican. Mm-hmm. You start out with the fact that the majority of the House is Republican, plus you have all these Democrats who are the number two Democrat, Steny Hoyer, is vehemently on board with this thing. So I think the House would be a lost cause. The action will be the Senate.
So why did the president have this group of four dozen House Democrats over at the White House, led by Florida Democrat Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's normally been a very, very strident supporter of AIPAC, and they apparently are very concerned that that this thing's going to screw up the diplomatic opening with Iran?
Yeah, they are very concerned, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz is also concerned, and she is strongly behind the president's effort. It just shows you how serious a threat this is to a president's ability to conduct foreign policy. If you have Debbie Wasserman Schultz joining the White House in trying to defeat this AIPAC initiative, but she was there to stand next to the administration people and join in saying this would be terrible for the United States, and of course she would say also for Israel, because because very likely, if there is no deal, if it just all falls through, there'd be a war. And, that would be a war that obviously not Israel would be involved in, because Israel would probably initiate it. So she has the credibility with the pro-Israel camp to say, hey, this would be bad for Israel too. But I have no doubt that the Israeli government is behind this effort. I mean, AIPAC doesn't act without getting its orders from the Israeli government. So this is kind of a really unprecedented. I have to say, Ian, I find it hard to believe that AIPAC would even allow itself to win this one. In other words, you're taking on the President of the United States, undermining him and the United States in general in front of the entire world, and demonstrating to the whole world that our foreign policy is dictated by a lobby for a foreign government. Does AIPAC really want that to become so obvious that there's no argument against it? Well, that would be the case if they succeeded in overriding the president's veto. The fact of the matter is, the only people, there's only two real, sectors that are opposed to the Iran deal. It's, you got the Saudis, who are against it because of their enmity within the region, but the Saudis don't have a lobby, essentially, in the United States, besides which, it's just a foreign lobby. They don't operate the way AIPAC does. They can't give money to campaigns. So on the other side, you have AIPAC and all these neocons, these neocon intellectual types, all of whom are associated with the Israel lobby, are the ones who are pushing this whole thing. If AIPAC wasn't pushing this, this wouldn't be happening. So that's why I say it would be just an incredible thing to see a president of the United States and United States foreign policy defeated by this lobby.
Well, already we've had Bernadette Meehan of the National Security Council spokeswoman suggesting that those that are opposing this in Congress, they should basically step up and say that they're for war, which is what they are for war. Is that an argument? Because you just mentioned it too, that that's basically what it comes down to.
That is what it is. So amazing, though, last night, after she said that, Steny Hoyer, the Democratic Majority Leader of the House, denounced her and the White House for saying it. Didn't say, he came out with a statement saying, it's not true, we're not for war. Well, if you read the bill, it is for war. Because it says, right in the bill itself, that if Israel feels the need to go to war over this Iran nuclear issue, the United States must automatically go to its aid, including, it specifically spells out, with military force. Automatically. We didn't even automatically go to war when Pearl Harbor was bombed. But that is what this thing says, without even a declaration of war. So basically this AIPAC or Menendez Kirk resolution is giving America's power whether to make war or make peace to a foreign government, and spells it out in legislative language.
Again, I'm speaking with MJ Rosenberg, who's a special correspondent with the Washington Spectator and a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. He worked on Capitol Hill for various Democratic members of the House and Senate for 15 years and previously served as the director of policy analysis for the Israel Policy Forum and was an editor of Near East Report, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee's APEX biweekly publication on Middle East policy. So If this is being driven by Israel, and as you point out, it's highly unlikely that AIPAC would be operating on its own, since it is the American-Israel Political Action Committee, that this must be coming from Netanyahu. What is going on there with Netanyahu's defense minister insulting the Secretary of State? The defense minister, Moshe Yalon, said in an interview with a major Israeli paper, he said that John Kerry, who has come to us determined and is acting out of an incomprehensible obsession and messianic fervor, cannot teach me anything about the conflict with the Palestinians. Now, he's subsequently, this has upset the U.S., and he subsequently apologized. But I think his attitude is pretty clear. And that's an attitude, by the way, that's been expressed before by Netanyahu and others in the Likud. So what's going on there?
Oh, it just struck me as you were reading that. Imagine if America's Secretary of Defense said that those same kind of things about Israel's Minister of Foreign Affairs. That person would be sacked immediately. A member of the American government is not allowed to speak in an unfriendly, unloving manner about anyone in Israel's government. And here you have the top Israeli of the defense establishment saying these awful things about our Secretary of State when Israel is a recipient of more foreign aid from the United States than any other country. Fact of the matter is, this government, and I'm not going to say this is not all the Israeli people, this government, this Likud right-wing orthodox settler coalition hates Barack Obama. No matter that Barack Obama has been excessively pro-Israel during his term, they hate him. They've hated him since the first minute that they laid eyes on him. In fact, during the 2008 campaign, I have a big New York Times story saying there were two countries in the world that were not for Barack Obama, and one was the Republic of Georgia, which liked John McCain, and the other one was Israel. Israel is a country where the Israeli government despises Barack Obama, and that's in total. Totally in contrast to American Jews, for instance, who voted for Obama 78% to 20%. But no, it's just they don't like him. They want him out. And sometimes what happens is with Netanyahu and these other guys, it just bubbles out of them. You can. I noticed today that the president of Israel, Shimon Peres, who's from the other side of the political aisle, an old Labor guy, is came right out and said Barack Obama is one of the best friends Israel ever had. But he's 90 years old, and his group is totally out of power. This is the Netanyahu crew, and they can't stand Obama.
And what and about what?
They don't like any Democrats, though. I think the one they do like is Hillary Clinton, but that's another story.
Well, what about John Kerry? He's been a faithful APAC supporter in his entire career.
Yeah, you'd think so. Yeah, but
and Joe Biden, by the way, Joe Biden is very, very, totally pro APAC and pro Israel. He's voted every time the way that they've wanted. So, what's their problem with those two guys?
Well, I think that I think there's a distinction between the two. Joe Biden's language about Israel is totally over the top. I mean, it's crazy stuff where he says there must be this is the exact quote, no daylight, he repeats it, between Israeli and American policies, which would be bizarre if you said it about Canada. John Kerry does not talk that way. I think that, I worked on Capitol Hill I worked in the lobby, and I've sat in rooms with both these guys, Biden and Kerry. Neither one of them can stand Netanyahu and that gang. They are both peace guys privately. I don't think that we have anyone on in the Democratic side of the aisle, except, maybe a few, who actually believe this stuff. But the difference also now would be that Kerry's not running for anything anymore. So he can say, to heck with the lobby, I'm going to push for a peace deal. And you don't hear boo from Joe Biden about anything where he'd be in any kind of opposition to the lobby. The hypocrisy of it all is awful. And the worst hypocrisy is among the Democrats and people like Al Franken and, Barbara Boxer and people like that. Even Elizabeth Warren, who is not supporting the APAC sanctions bill, hasn't put out a word praising this remarkable deal that Obama pulled off with Iran. The best Democrats are silent on this, with the exception of a few. And I do give credit here to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I saw today Barbara Mikulski spoke out. Senator Feinstein spoke out. A few. But no, they're always, they're always looking at their shoulder. They're watching those APAC checkbooks.
And if 78% of American Jews are liberal and voted for Obama, in contrast to the current Israeli government who apparently hate him, where are these checks coming from? Are they coming from the 20% of, the Sheldon Adelsons?
Well, they don't come from the Sheldon Sheldon Adelson only gives to Republicans, so, and that's almost. But when you're talking about you're talking about a few hundred people giving lots of monies to all different ways. We're not talking about the AIPAC money. Is a few, literally a few hundred people associated with AIPAC, but many of them are billionaires. So, and there are all kinds of ways you get around the, electoral, the various limits, soft money, all these different kinds of devices. But we're not talking about, the Jewish community at large. This is, in this regard, it's important to say that the politics of Israel are like the politics of everything else in this country. It's all about a few fat cats. We're not when we talk donors, we're talking, the Koch brothers and people they're not involved with this issue, but the Koch brothers and the Adelsons and that, Hillary Clinton's, her top donor is the billionaire. He's an Israeli American who invented Power Rangers. I forgot his name. He lives in California. He's our top donor.
Right.
I mean, it's just like we're not talking about people, down the street who are writing a check for $100. We're talking about the big money. And then, when you look at someone like Chuck Schumer, pretty much, he tends to, he supports all the special interests that give him money, whether it's, he's a big friend of the banks. He's a big friend of Wall Street. He made sure that derivatives weren't regulated in before 2008, and he's a big friend of AIPAC. People like that, Democrats like Schumer and Menendez and Gillibrand and, so many of them, both Minnesota senators, they just go where the money is. I mean, it's really, and there isn't any money on the other side. I mean, that makes it different than some other issues. I mean, there are issues where the fat cat side is opposed by some other side that has some clout. They're really there's the pro-Likud side and the which has tons of money, and there's no one on the other side that gives money on that same issue, but on the other side saying peace supporters.
Well, what about JPAC? Is anybody are they taking a stand on this?
J Street has no money.
Right.
If J Street had access to AIPAC's money, then these people would be saying the opposite.
Right.
It's just that's the way it is, and I just sometimes I get very I'm very conscious of always focusing on AIPAC. That's my issue, but that's the, we're in a country where that the billionaires rule, and if you haven't seen it yet, you definitely want to see Robert Reich movie Inequality for All,
right,
about the way how the super wealthy run this country. So that's the way it is on every issue. But what grates me about this one is this is a foreign policy issue. This is a lobby that's acting in the interest of a foreign government. In other words, I can't stand the NRA and what they represent, but at the same time, they are an American interest group. This is a faux American interest group. In other words, it's made up of Americans, the AIPAC. You can't be a non-American and be part of AIPAC. But it's taking its directions from a foreign government. And, every other country, no other country has an AIPAC type thing. Other foreign countries are represented by foreign agents. Foreign agents aren't allowed to be involved in politics. That was the brilliance of inventing AIPAC, to be an American organization that's doing the bidding of a foreign government and getting away with it.
So what is then the logic or the strategy here from Netanyahu and these others, their supporters in AIPAC? If they want war with Iran, why, and they're against this diplomatic opening, I don't understand the logic of it. Because if you use the analogy with the Soviet Union, where we had military confrontation, we had a Cold War because we couldn't afford to have a hot war, otherwise we'd all be dead. But the same logic applies, that rock and roll brought down the Iron Curtain as much as right. anything else. And the same is true in Iran. You know, you've got a moderate opening here. Most of the young and the women are tied with this hideous theocratic radical government. And as you mentioned, you got this proxy war going on with Saudi Arabia where you have a choice between two incredibly fanatical Islamic terrorist governments, you know, going at each other, but the people are not the same, and the Iranian people want to join the world, and that's why they voted overwhelming for this new guy. So you've got to do things gradually and finally get rid of this government. You can't take them head on. The last thing you can do is have a war with them, because all that will do is rally the Iranian people around the flag.
Well, you know that I agree with you. That is so right. I mean, and it would seem that you know, for any thinking person, could figure it out that way. Including this, you know, Israelis who tend to be pretty smart people. So I have to say, I consider Israel Netanyahu's behavior illogical. But there are two components to it. One is that the Netanyahu either has or pretends to have a Holocaust obsession, in which the Iranians are not like even the Soviets, they're like the Nazis. And that if they have an atom bomb, they would, despite the fact that if they attacked Israel, their own country would be destroyed, they would attack anyway because they are insane fanatics. That is what he claims to believe. So from his point of view, of course, again, it gets irrational because, well, Obama's the P5+1 agreement is designed to prevent them from getting a nuclear weapon. But nonetheless, they're illogically believing that. The thing is, they want regime change. In Iran, and they want regime change imposed from the outside. It's sort of like their dream that the same group had about what was his name?
Ahmadinejad?
No, the Iraqi who was their puppet. Remember?
Ahmad Chalabi, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you know that they dream of bringing back someone like the Shah's people, where the Israelis would be in great shape in Iran. Israel does not, and this it's pretty much across the spectrum. Israelis don't think that don't like the idea and will do anything to stop Iran from assuming its kind of a rightful place as being a significant player in the region. Mm-hmm. Israel likes to be able to do what it wants whenever it wants to. From Netanyahu's point of view, an Iran that's at peace with the United States, because after all, if an agreement is reached, it's not going to just, you know, end this nuclear project. There's also going to be good relations between the United States and Iran, because that's what the Iranians want. As you said, the Iranians want to come out from the dark. So that means that all of a sudden, America has other friends in the region, because after all, it's in our interest to be friendly with Iran right now, because because we have the same enemies. You know, but Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda and the Sunni fanatics in Iraq.
And Syria, right, yeah.
Yeah, Israel worries about that whole, you know, Israel will do anything to deny Iran any piece of regional hegemony. Mm-hmm. They want regional hegemony, and they basically have it now. I mean, they can accept, yeah, you know, sharing it with the Saudis, but right, not the Iranians.
Well, MJ, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Again, I've been speaking with MJ Rosenberg as a special correspondent at the Washington Spectator and a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. He worked on Capitol Hill for various Democratic members of the House and Senate for 15 years and previously served as a director of policy analysis for the Israel Policy Forum and was an editor of Near East Report, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC's biweekly publication on Middle East policy. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how in West Virginia toxins have been present throughout the state, and this latest focus on a chemical spill is business as usual in amongst the coal and the mountaintop removal companies in West Virginia.